Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Humans and dogs share a remarkable relationship that is unique in the animal world. As primates, we see and comprehend the world in a fundamentally different way than do dogs and their species, the canids. These differences explain some of the reasons why we act the way we do around dogs. Understanding these differences can bring out the best in the behavior of our canine companion or a dog we wish we had never encountered on the street. The other end of the leash, Why We Do What We Do Around Dogs, is a recent book by Patricia McConnell, a certified animal behaviorist affiliated with the University of Wisconsin. In her book, she discusses, among many topics, how to think from a dog's perspective, how to get your dog to come when called by acting less like a primate and more like a dog, and where dogs and humans share personality types. I spoke with Patricia McConnell by phone and asked her to begin our conversation by explaining some of the differences between a human and a dog's genetic makeup that draws us to them as a best friend, yet often with more than the desired frustration.
So how are they different from us in a way that makes us love them especially?
And makes us so ultimately frustrated with them.
Right, both. Sort of a love/frustration relationship. Well, I think, you know, you asked it in just the right way, because you asked about us as well as dogs. And the book I've written, The Other End of the Leash, focuses, it's a book for dog lovers, but it's just as much about us. And that's really the issue, is comparing them and us. And we are so similar to dogs in so ways. We're so social. You know, a lot of animals aren't that social. They're happy by themselves, but dogs and humans are so social. But we also have very different ways of expressing affection, of greeting each other, of calling each other to come, that when we do our own natural behavior, some of which we don't even think about, sometimes we end up confusing our dogs because they interpret it completely differently.
Well, can you give us some examples?
Sure, yeah. Here's a classic example, and I think a lot of people know this, but there's still a lot of people who don't, is in the way we greet. You know, think about how we humans greet somebody. You're walking down the street, you see somebody you've met once or twice, you look right at them, right? You look right at their face, walk straight up to them, directly towards them, you stretch your paw out, you know, reach towards them, and you shake hands and you look right in their eyes. And this eye contact is so important. It's taught, you know, in like Carnegie courses. And if you meet somebody who won't look you in the eye, don't you feel a little nervous?
You always wonder about that.
It's a little creepy when somebody won't meet you in the eye. Isn't that true? But if you watch the way dogs naturally greet, dogs greet the opposite. They avoid direct eye contact. They stay sideways to each other. They make very little face-to-face contact at first. I mean, thank heavens we don't greet like dogs do, you know, if you think about it. They do a lot of sniffing in places that we just don't want to go there. So it's a good thing we don't share that necessarily with dogs, but we often forget that this natural behavior that we have that actually is similar with other primates, it's, you know, it's not just all learned, it's something that's genetically hardwired in us, it can be very scary and very threatening to dogs. And I've had a lot of clients who were begging people, please don't pet my dog, please don't look at my dog, because he's shy, afraid of unfamiliar people. And so often the other person will say, oh, but I love dogs, and then reach over and go to bend down and loom over the dog and pet them on the top of the head, and the dog either reacts by trying to run away or regrettably by being aggressive.
So you're suggesting what by all of this?
What I'm suggesting is that if people, for dog lovers, and there's so many of us out there who want to improve their relationship with their dogs and who want to have a more obedient dog, which I think a lot of us do, one of the best things they can do is focus on their own behavior as well as the behavior of their dog. You know, dogs are watching every little micro movement that you make. Every shift of your weight from forward to backwards means something to your dog.
But our species are not used to watching every shift of our weight.
You know, that's such an interesting question. And here, tell me what you think of my answer, because I would suggest that we actually are, but we don't think about it consciously. I mean, think, Barry, if you and I were talking or you saw somebody who was smiling at you, and then the corners of their mouth changed just the tiniest bit from a smile into a smirk, that's not a very big change, you know. You can make a tiny change in your face or your body posture that has a huge meaning, and we all do actually use that all the time. I used to work with troubled adolescents, and when I was being trained, the first thing I was taught by a psychologist, a practicing psychologist, was you certainly want to listen to what they say, but most importantly, watch their body. Watch their body language, because that'll tell you more about what they're really feeling inside than their words will. So we actually do pay attention, but we're not that conscious of it. I think we tend to put our conscious energy more in the words because we're such a verbal species.
Well, I think that's true. So with dogs that you don't know, follow the owner's direction.
Yes, and even sometimes, given that it's your hand and your face, some owners aren't even aware of how nervous their dog actually is. The best way to greet a dog that you don't know is to just let it come to you. And if it doesn't come up to you, then it doesn't want to be petted.
Leave it alone.
You know, I think it's perfectly reasonable to be anthropomorphic in this case. You know, you don't want every stranger who walks down the street to handle your body. You know, think about it, you know. And there are some dogs who just love touch from everybody. Oh, hi, hi, hi. And they wag from the shoulders back, and they love everybody. But there are plenty of other dogs. They all have their own personalities, much of which is genetic, who are not fond of being handled and touched by strangers.
Well, Patricia, I wanted to ask you about what you just said. Oh, hi, hi, hi.
Yeah.
Why is it that people talk to dogs in different forms of conversation, different intonations that we use when we talk with each other?
Oh, it's a great question. It's a great question. I can only speculate, and here's what my guess is about. If you actually look at the literature on human behavior around babies, human infants, it turns out that we naturally raise our voices when we're around little babies, and it also turns out that little babies have ears that are set on a channel almost. They are more receptive to higher tones than lower ones. They are more responsive to higher voices than lower voices. And my guess, and it's just a guess, I don't know, tell me what you think about this, or just think about it. My guess is that because dogs are nonverbal and because they're dependent on us, I think even with people who don't think of their dogs as furry children, I think there's a tendency to just automatically raise your voice when you talk around dogs because they're like children, they're dependent, and they're nonverbal. And so we sort of put them mentally into that category.
And they're also down there much closer to the floor.
You know, some of them are tiny, you know. And there is, by the way, and this is just an observation, I've never seen any good scientific data on it, but there appears to be a correlation between how high-voiced and sort of baby-talking people get with how small the dog is. So little tiny lap dogs, Maltese, Bichon Frises, little tiny toy poodles who people carry around, they elicit more baby talk. How many people baby talk to somebody walking down the street with two Rottweilers, you know, or two huge 110-pound St. Bernards? I mean, it just people don't do it quite as much if they're bigger. So I think that might have something to do with it.
So then carrying that one step further, when we talk to dogs to try and get them to follow our command as the owner, or someone who's not the owner but wants another dog that's nearby, for instance, to go away, what are some suggestions you have to get the dog to respond the way we want them to respond?
It's a great question. You know, as it happens, I did my PhD on this. There's a chapter in the book about sound and using it, and I recorded professional animal handlers from all around the world who spoke a total of, I think it was 16 different languages, and here's the basic sort of bullet points, and none of this works perfectly every time. It's not magic, you know, they're not machines, but people all around the world use short, rapidly repeated notes to get animals to speed up, to get excited. So my generic call a dog to come signal is pop, 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 or clapping. You can clap your hands back and forth, snap your fingers, click like that, that tends to get attention, and it tends to get dogs to speed up. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to speed up towards you. They might speed up faster going after the rabbit, but that tends to speed and sort of excite dogs. Whereas continuous single notes like, whoa, or easy, good boy, sounds like that are real drawn out, those tend to soothe dogs. And sounds that are one abrupt note that maybe goes up and down really fast, like, hey, or whoa, that tends to stop a fast-moving animal. So if your dog is running away from you, for example, now this isn't magic. If your dog has learned to chase squirrels and ignore you, nothing you're going to say without training is going to work. But your best chance of stopping an animal who's starting to get excited and move away from you is a quick, short note, like, hey. Because that stops them for a microsecond and then gets their attention. But then you got a quick, you do something with that attention if they turn and look at you. Quick, run the other way. So now they have something to chase after that's more appropriate.
So actually move. Use your body language to get them to follow you.
Yes, and so often because we're primates, we humans, we just sort of stand there and look at them, or we'll even walk towards them. Because we want to decrease the distance between us and them, but if every time you walk towards your dog, in dog language, you're actually stopping your dog. It means stop. So if you want your dog to come to you, you want to turn away from him. Dogs go the way your feet and your face is pointed. So if you want your dog to come to you, you actually need to turn your body around and move away from where you were, clapping, and you can go, boop, 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 boop. And that tends to encourage your dog to come closer to you rather than stay away from you.
That causes someone to have a lot of faith.
What do you mean?
Well, faith that the dog will actually come when you have this creature that hasn't in the past.
Yes, and I don't want to pretend that if you have a dog who's learned to run away from you, that this is going to be like the magic, but it works. If anything's going to work without you having to have the dog under a physical control, which obviously you need to do for safety purposes anytime there's a safety issue, then this is what it is. It's very common for people to move towards their dog and lean towards their dog, and it stops their dog. I just did a seminar, dog training seminar, just not too long ago, and I could turn and face a dog, and it would stop it, and I could turn away from the dog, and it would follow me. And I would turn back and stop it and turn away, and it would follow me, and it was like, and the dog wasn't connected to me. There was no leash. It was just free.
Patricia, I want to ask you what to do when you have a dog that's learned to run away from you. But first, I want to mention that this week on Radio Curious, we're talking with Patricia McConnell, who wrote a book called The Other End of the Leash, Why We Do What We Do Around Dogs. You are listening to Radio Curious, and I'm Barry Vogel. Patricia, when you have a dog that, by virtue of habit, which for dogs is a result of training, that runs away from you when you try and call it, how do you make that change? How do you retrain the creature?
It's a great question because it happens to a lot of us. You know, it's just the way it is. The first thing you have to do is take away the fun in that you have to set up a logistical, almost mechanical situation where the dog is on a long line or there's a fence or some way of stopping the dog, because if you think, oh, I think it'll be okay, you go outside, the dog tears off, and you yell after it, and it totally ignores you, and it's going to get across the street to the neighbor kids and the neighbor dog, and it's going to play for a while and get attention. By the time you get to it, it's already been reinforced. So you have to mechanically stop the dog from having fun doing it, and then you have to, and this is the easy and the fun part, you want to make it really fun for the dog to stay around you and to come when you call. So
let's talk about some of those mechanical ways of doing it.
Well, one great way to do it is get a very, very long light line. Say you have an unfenced yard, and when your dog was a puppy, he always stayed in the yard. He always came when you called. But now he's an adolescent, and like all adolescents, he's getting a mind of his own, and has twice run across the road, which is really dangerous, and run over to the neighbors to play with their dog. What I would do is I would go outside with the dog on two leashes, one very long light line that's as light as it can be and still be enough for the dog to stop him if need be, and then his regular leash. And then you take him outside, let him sniff around a little bit, and then very ostentatiously take his regular leash off And most dogs like, oh, I'm free now. The leash is off. And then I would start doing come training exercises. It's sort of a circus trick, you know, because there's no noise in dog society that means drop everything you're doing the instant I make a little noise and come flying to me like Lassie. There isn't actually one in human society either. I mean, surely you've said just a minute when somebody called you, right? So you need to train your dog like a circus trick. And what you want to do is you're outside in your yard, you've got in your hand, in your pocket, you've got small, incredibly tasty, wonderful, great treats. Not little kibble, not wheat-based, grainy things, but chicken or, you know, something really, really good that your dog is like, wow, that is so good. And what you're going to do is you're going to call your dog to come, doing what I suggested. You're going to clap and sort of play bow and turn and run the other way. And as your dog comes towards you, good dog, good dog, good dog, and then you're going to give him this treat. And then you're going to run the other way. And as soon as he starts to run after you, you call your dog to come. And as he does, good dog, good dog, good dog, and then you're going to give him a treat. And you repeat that maybe 5 to 10 times and do that a lot. And you can even do it once. You know, you do it for 5 seconds. And after you've done that for a couple of weeks, then you can let the line just drag rather than holding it in your hand, and then eventually you're going to do it without the line. And basically what you're doing is you're teaching your dog it's really, really fun to come when they call, because there's a big payoff at the end, and I'm sort of in the habit of it. I like a dog to turn around when you call to come, and they can almost do double takes sometimes. It's like, wait a minute, I was going to go over there, but I'm going this way now. What happened? You know? I didn't even think about it.
Let's talk about senior citizens who often have dogs as companions, and they're only a companion with whom they live.
Sure.
And it might be a little difficult for them to train a dog in this way. Do you have any ideas other than shipping the dog out to a training school or engaging someone to give them this kind of instruction?
You know, yes, I do, and it's a great question. And first of all, even people who aren't feeling particularly mobile, and this is true of younger people who aren't as mobile that you can't go dashing at a dead run across your yard, even, as I was saying before, even if you turn the other way and move 2 steps, but you've got a little piece of chicken in your hand, that's going to help a lot. That's going to help a tremendous amount. It's also, I like to teach all dogs to stop on a particular command, either sit or down, or even you could say no. And that's really easy. You can start in your house. You just say, no, in a low, don't yell, but in a low voice, because that's authoritative to a dog, no. And then if they stop what they're doing, and usually they will because they're sort of surprised at this noise, and look at you, you give them a treat. And basically all you're doing is teaching them, if I say, no, that means stop what you're doing and turn around and look at me, and something wonderful will happen. And you have to make sure the treat doesn't come every time, or else if you don't have one, then they won't do it unless you do have a treat. But if you make it intermittent so that they never know which time they're going to get the treat, or the running, or the belly rubs, you know, I could intermix it. It's not always food. Sometimes it's ball play. Sometimes it's petting. Then they never know when they're going to get something good, and they basically learn if she says no, and I stop what I'm doing and turn my head and look at her. And again, you don't need to be particularly active to do that. The dog will learn to pay more attention to you when you make noises to it. There's got to be a payoff there for all individual animals, dogs and humans, who are always looking to feel better. And if you can teach your dog that if he listens to you, good things happen, then you're going to have a more obedient dog.
So in another way of putting it, which you do talk about in your book, the human is the leader of the pack of the person and the dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to clarify that because I think that's so often misunderstood. I like to talk about humans as being benevolent leaders. And I think the whole, rather than the concept of you've got to get, you know, that real harsh advice, Barry, if you've got to get dominance over your dog, that's missing the point. What dogs are social animals, and I think dogs are most comfortable and secure and happiest if they have a leader. And just like kids need a parent, and kids in school need a teacher, you know. It's not a question of force and oppression. It's a question of dogs need to learn boundaries in order to be happy and to learn frustration, tolerance, and patience if they're going to live in our society, just like kids do. And I think dogs feel much more secure because, after all, They may be adults, but they're dependent upon us. I mean, they can't open the door, you know. They're really helpless in a lot of ways. They can't open the door. Think about it. You're an adult animal, but you can't get out. You cannot. You're completely dependent on this weird other species that walks on two paws, you know, to open the door. So I think any animal in that situation, they need to know that there are boundaries and that they can count on a leader. And I think the ideal relationship for us with our dogs is to be benevolent, Gandhi-like, kind leaders who understand how to set boundaries for our dogs, all the while being loving and supportive.
When you say benevolent and Gandhi-like,
yeah.
I think what you're saying is not roughhousing and not playing, not quite violent, but real rough games with your dog.
Well, that's a really good point, and I'm just going to back up for a second, because regrettably a lot of people are still violent with their dogs. You know, the way I was originally trained to train dogs was by using physical punishment. And basically the standard method of training, and I regret to say in a lot of places in the country, it still is do it or I'll hurt you. You know, I'll snap the leash really hard and snap it against your neck, or I'll yell at you, or I'll swat you on the rump with a newspaper. And that's not leadership. That's just sort of force and violence. And so that needs to be avoided. And you can get dogs to be very obedient by using positive reinforcement and sort of fun payoffs without spoiling them. But you're absolutely right, Barry. People also need to be careful about rough and tumble play. I talk about this in the play chapter.
Well, tell us what the results are of the rough and tumble play. What is the dog learning?
Well, you know, it's a really good question. I'm not actually sure what they're learning, but can I tell you what my concerns are?
Of course. That's why we're here.
Yeah. One of the things that's fun for me in the book is comparing the play of humans and dogs, because we play like chimpanzees and other primates play, us humans. And like dogs, one of the things we share in play is that rough and tumble sort of wrestle play, one individual is trying to get an advantage over the other. But it turns out if you analyze human play, which scientists have done, humans and chimpanzees, by the way, are wrestling to get an advantage such that one individual sort of pins the other to the ground. It's really like sort of classic wrestling. Dogs play rough and tumble play to try and get in inhibited bites. That's sort of the definition of winning to dogs. And the problem...
What do you mean inhibited bites?
Oh, you know how dogs will sort of bite at you or put their mouths on you but not put any pressure down and not actually hurt you?
Right, right.
You know, they're very conscious of how much pressure they actually put on you if they have their jaws around you. And what's similar in play with humans and dogs is that we both try to inhibit ourselves. But what's also, I think, problematically similar with dogs and human play is that both of us tend to get emotionally aroused during play sometimes. You know, play can be very arousing, emotionally exciting, and both species tend to get a little overly excited sometimes. You know the old joke about I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out. I mean, think of all the sports events and the recess times where a teacher had to break up a fight because kids got playing and they got too excited. Dogs can do the same thing, and I've had too many tragic cases of very nice dogs who were playing, got real excited, had always played well with children, and one horrible day were playing, and they got overly aroused, and sometimes over-arousal can lead to losing your temper in both of our species. And all of a sudden, the dog got irritated, lost it, and attacked the child. And some of these attacks, when the dogs are so aroused, they're just so sad. The kids are hurt so badly.
So what do you do in a situation where the family pet that you love hurts the child?
It's such a difficult one, and it depends on so many factors. You know, most of what I do for a living is work with serious aggression cases, and the range of outcomes is really big. There are many cases where a dog has bitten a family member once, and you truly can intervene. The family can learn to train the dog and work with the dog and do behavior modification and conditioning such that you really end up with a dog who's very trustable. There's no 100% with a dog. That's not possible. But sometimes the treatment outcome is really optimistic. And there are other times that It's just frankly not. There are times where dogs are so profoundly unsafe. I mean, I've had far too many cases where dogs bit severely, multiple repeated full mouth bites where people were badly injured. I'm doing an expert witness on a fatality right now where six Rottweilers killed a 10-year-old girl. Just incredibly tragic. So there's a whole gamut. There are some dogs that can be treated, and sometimes I'm afraid sometimes owners need to face a very difficult decision about what to do with a dog who, say the dog has bitten only once, but the bite was severe. You know, some child had 420 stitches. And regrettably, there are times where, just like in medicine, you can't fix everything. And there are times owners often have to make that sad choice to euthanize a dog because they're simply so unsafe.
Well, that's kind of a sad note on which to end our discussion, Patricia McConnell. I do want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious and ask you if you could tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately.
Yes, I would love to, and it's a much happier note. If people are interested in animal behavior, and you know my book talks about humans as primates, there's a wonderful book titled The Ape and the Sushi Master by Franz De Waal. It's spelled D-E-W-A-A-L. Franz De Waal, The Ape and the Sushi Master, which talks about primates and culture, and can animals beside humans have culture. He's a lovely writer. It's a fascinating book.
Can they have culture?
Yes, that's his argument, and I think it's made extremely well. It's a very credible argument.
Well, Patricia McConnell, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thanks for having me.
Patricia McConnell is the author of The Other End of the Leash, Why We Do What We Do Around Dogs. The book she recommends is The Ape and the Sushi Master by Franz De Waal. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available at cost for $10 each. I'll give you the address in just a moment. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your cards, letters, suggestions, and ideas for future programs. Here's the address. Radio Curious, Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's U-K-I-A-H, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541, and the email is curious@pacific.net. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Stay curious, be creative, and join us again next week.